Men, if you're ready to reclaim your edge, listen up. I used to be held back by constant bathroom trips, with multiple wake-ups during my sleep and looking for restrooms whenever I was out. Then I discovered Better Man. After just 2 months, I started experiencing fewer trips to the bathroom, less urge to go, and I even slept through some nights. I feel a noticeable boost in my overall well-being, even sexual stamina. It gives me the freedom and confidence to live life on my terms. Better Man is clinically tested and trusted by thousands of men over 25 years. Ready to take back control? Go to BeBetterNow.com to order your supply today. That's BeBetterNow.com.
These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Use as directed. Individual results may vary.
Okay, I'm not a bad person. I'm not.
You've been arrested 13 times.
Sure. But there's bad and then there's really bad, right? I mean, what did I ever do except hustle to get high, man? I mean, shit, sometimes you gotta throw a brick through a window or make some guy think you're gonna suck his dick under the highway, and then you're pimp shows up and he's got a rubber revolver, so the guy's on the ground and he's begging, please don't kill me, I've got a family, or whatever. Shit, that's just business, okay? I am not a villain.
Hey everybody, welcome to our podcast. I'm Jason.
And I'm Rima.
This is Legion Cast episode 13.
Lucky 13.
I wanted first off to say something that has nothing to do with this podcast, but thank you for guesting for me on Walking Dead Cast with Lucy this week.
Oh, it was fun. I wish it was under better circumstances. It was fun to do, but only because you were sick that I got to do that. So
we were, Reem and I were just talking about how I was face down, pressed with my cheek against the cold bathroom tile, writhing in agony. It was so much fun.
Well, I think we've all probably pictured you doing that at one point or another.
Really?
So, you know, I'm teasing. I don't know.
Well, anyways, I'm totally fine now and I'm ready to start. So let's get into our top five highlights for Legion season 2, episode 13, creatively entitled chapter 13. So did you like it?
I did. I will happily admit I was confused for much of it. I still am not sure if I'm going to make it through this podcast and be able to really have anything intelligent to say. Not that I ever do any other time, but anything intelligent to say about this one, because I'm really just so confused on so much of it. I mean, the end was, I think, pretty clear, but just like everything that led up to like those last 8 minutes, I'm so confused. But I did like it because it's Legion and it's beautiful and there's great music and great writing and actors. I mean, Aubrey Plaza, I mean, holy hell, she knocks it out and she's always a pleasure to watch on the screen. So I did. I liked it.
I'm pretty sure I have a handle on it, but maybe by the end of this, I will be just confused as you. We'll
no,
see.
I think it's going to be the other way around. You're going to help me. You always help me figure it out.
I liked it too. I like that there's a change of pace. I mean, I stand by what I said last week. I think that was my favorite episode. It was just really beautiful. But this was a completely different kind of Legion, and I loved it too. All right, let's get into our top five. Do you mind if I go first this week?
Not at all, since you let me have your guest spot yesterday. You get to
saved
take the
my
lead.
Bacon. But anyways, okay. So I really enjoyed that they came right in, and you could tell even from apparently on Legion, which I love
that
that it was going to be about Lenny, because they showed a lot of Lenny scenes, and I was like, awesome, because that's one thing that we've talked about on the podcast, that I felt like, you know, I love Aubrey Plaza, I love the character, but it feels like they don't really have a handle on what's going on with Lenny, because sometimes she's the Shadow King, sometimes she seems like Lenny, and she used to be Benny. And so sometimes I wonder if the writers even know, or if they just kind of lost control of it. So it made me feel good to see, oh, good, it looks like they're going to really dive into that and not ignore it. And then when you had Clark sitting there asking her questions, they're the same questions I have. What's your name? That's a good one. Or what body is that? Or, you know, you used to be a disembodied consciousness. Now you have a body. What the hell's going on? So I really enjoyed that. And I think that, yeah, it was confusing, but we, I think by the end of it, what we could piece together is that she was Lenny Busker. She's a huge addict. She got caught up, well, when Sid and David shared places and Sid lost control of David's powers in his body, caused her to get fused in the wall with her ass in one room and her tits in another. And
we've all been there.
Yeah, all right. Maybe not in the wall, but somehow or another. And then she died. And the D3, or then, but the Shadow King took her consciousness, took control of her consciousness. And so I think she was inside David at that point, but under the control of the Shadow King, her consciousness. And D3 took her body out to the desert and buried it, which apparently this is where they kind of stash things, because I feel like David's sister's stashed there too, maybe like a witness protection kind of thing.
They're like the mob.
Kind of.
Everything in the desert.
Yeah, just hide it out there. And that's convenient too, because they were trying to make us think that Farouk and Oliver were going to get Farouk's body, which we know is in the desert. But actually, they had grabbed this device from D3 when they were there trying to find the monk. And they went out to the desert and they dug up Lenny's body. And it was funny how Farouk was just like drinking his tea while Oliver's struggling. And then he's all, well, let me just use my telekinesis.
I know. I'm like, why didn't you just do that in the beginning? You can see Oliver's kind of pissed off already about like, he's like, dude, I just got this new suit.
Do I have to touch it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. In his new suit styling. And so anyway, they dig it up. They just need a little piece of flesh. And it took me the whole episode to figure this all out. I think it was supposed to take everyone. But they take the flesh, they put it in the device. It gives the pattern of Lenny's body. That's what they needed that for. So then they went out to his sister, Amy, and just killed her, basically.
Essentially.
Yeah, and then they used that device to transform her body into Lenny. But we know also that Lenny was, I believe everything she said about her, what was it? Her grand that used to drink from the orange soda, but it had
the
vodka in there.
The soda.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And she, her father would rather watch, what was it?
Black men having sex with preteen girls on the internet.
Oh, God. Yeah, just a shitty life. And that she, and I loved when she's trying to convince Clark that she's not a bad person. Sometimes you got to make some guy think you're going to suck his dick under the highway. And then your pimp shows up and he's got a rubber revolver. So the guy's on the ground and he's begging, please don't kill me. I got a family or whatever. Shit, that's just business, okay? I'm not a villain.
Like you said, we've all been there, right?
Yeah. So she's... she's had a rough life. I mean, it's funny, all that stuff, but also there are people who have that life and it's really rough, right? So it's like,
absolutely. Fuck. She has not had a great childhood. You know, her grandma gets her drunk at 9 years old. Mom doesn't seem to mind too much and probably a little resentful of her life. And yeah, she had a pretty rotten life. She was a junkie and an addict and probably did some questionable things in order to obtain those drugs. So
yeah, and she's been arrested several times, bricks through windows. And then when Lenny took her consciousness, she said he kept her kind of like, it was a nice turn of phrase, like drawers, like in a morgue, and lets them out only when he wants to play. And so then he would use her image sometimes in the mindscape. I think we only saw her in the mindscape in season one after she died. Now's the first time she's been in the physical world. But mostly just kind of trapped. Oh yeah, and she said something about that whole evil anything. I was faking it so that he whatever. So that makes me feel like when they were traipsing through D3 together, disintegrating people, that really was her kind of playing along. But so the only thing I feel like I really don't quite understand is why the Shadow King would make David think that his old friend Benny was Lenny. Remember that?
Yeah, I don't know why.
Who happens to have a name that rhymes, and he's also an addict. So that was weird. Why? I mean, I feel like maybe that was a remnant of another storyline that never went anywhere or something. I don't know. Or else just the Shadow King messes with people.
Right. Yeah, because there was supposed to be a real Benny that was a junkie and a drug addict, but Lenny did exist too. So
yeah.
I'm still kind of confused about that as well.
And I think the idea is that he met Lenny at Clockworks. And
right.
Benny had been his friend who got him into all kinds of trouble before that.
Right.
Convinced him to steal from his psychiatrist and all that.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think? Does that seem all right?
Yeah, so far. Everything. I think you summed it up pretty well. Said.
Okay, cool.
I think we can wrap it up from here.
Well, I accidentally did 2 points just then, I see. Oh, well. What's your number five?
Well, you kind of went over some of it already, and my number five was the interrogation of Lenny. So we talked a little bit about Clark. I liked seeing the different like versions of Lenny that we got, and how she kind of played it to try to get what she wanted, because she kept asking for David. She wanted to talk to David, mm-hmm. and that's what she kept asking for consistently throughout her interrogation, at least until the end when she finally did get to see David. But, you know, with Clark, she seemed kind of sad, playing a victim role, sound like she was, like, trying to gain some sympathy, you know, telling her story of her grand, you know, like, you know, don't you feel bad for me? Look at my shitty life, you know, that kind of aspect of it. And she seemed very innocent. You felt, you could almost, like, really kind of feel for her a little bit. And
she
I think that we were...
She's like, I'm not working for the Shadow King.
Well, but she, at least she's telling the truth about it. She's lying about it, but she is at least like saying, well, yeah, I kind of am, but this, you know, I do still want, like, she did want to live. And I think that we're seeing more of real Lenny than what we've seen before. We saw maybe a little glimpse in season one before the whole incident, before she got put into the wall and essentially died.
Absolutely. And I like how when she goes on that story about her grand, and it's like, oh, there's so much detail here. It's making me believe what she's saying. But then maybe that's suspicious because it might seem like she's trying a little too hard. And Clark comes back with, are you the Shadow King? Which is another good question.
Yeah, I really liked his interrogation of her. I liked how he was... At first, I didn't know what he was doing when he pricked her finger. I thought it was like a little DNA thing because they didn't know whose body that was.
Yeah.
But it looked like it was just proving that she could bleed, that she was real.
Oh.
In like a real body.
Yeah.
And because he said, after he did that, a living, bleeding, body. So they know that, okay, you are real. You are here. Mm-hmm. We know it's not your body, but it's somebody's body. And who is it? And he wasn't taking her crap, that's for sure. So I liked his whole scene with them.
About we have rooms in this building down below where we forget about people.
I can't imagine anything worse than the room that she was already in. That's a pretty messed up room.
I know. Which was all disconcerting, but very cool.
Yeah, and I'm sure it's on purpose to really like throw her off balance, I'm sure. But yeah, it was very disconcerting. I was getting a little bit dizzy there at the beginning as the room, he's walking in and the room starts to turn as he starts walking down the steps. I'm like, okay, good way to start Legion. I'm already dizzy and I have no idea what's going on. And then we get Ptonomy. And Ptonomy is, you know, talking to her about, you know, the past and the present and how the now doesn't exist. I thought this was a real interesting and confusing exchange. I don't really know what was happening there with Ptonomy. I know he was like not essentially reading her mind, but like reading her memories like he does. And he was getting these really weird memories. And then he sees Fukuyama and he sees the Vermilion. You see that little dark, greasy chicken looking thing that delusion essentially going into his ear again. Then you see, is that really the face under that basket for Admiral Fukuyami? I don't know, but I was just really confused by that whole exchange. And then he wakes up and he's choking her,
as happens. Yeah, we've all experienced that.
Yeah, buy a girl a drink first, right? At least if you're gonna choke me out, buy me a drink.
It seemed like he loosened his grip, but he still had his hands around her throat for a while there.
He did. It was just kind of a confusing exchange. I don't quite know what we're supposed to get from that, but I'm sure we're going to get a little bit more. And I was just interested thinking, does she know or understand what's been done to her? And is she faking it? Like, how much is she faking? How much is really her and her like genuine responses and genuinely Lenny? And then, of course, we had David and that whole exchange. I really loved that exchange between her and David, because it was kind of like, you know, she's lifting her head up and he's just looking at her, kind of grinning at her, and she gives him that smile. And it was like old times at Clockworks, and he gives her the Twizzler.
Yeah. And he's all, I know you're here because of the Shadow King. So he's talking to her like a friend, but mm-hmm. like, I can read your mind. It's almost like you would to your... to any friend who's not being totally honest, you know? It's like, come on, dude.
Yeah. I just like the different Lennies that we kind of got, and which one was really genuine. How much was she manipulating? How much was, you know, really her? I'm not sure if she's still under any type of influence, if she's truly free from the Shadow King.
I doubt it.
Being in this different body.
I don't think Shadow King would let her.
Well, it's so many questions. It's just so many questions. But that's what I liked about it, was just that first, or the all the exchanges interrogation that we got of Lenny.
Okay, a couple of things you mentioned. So the delusion chick going into Potonomy, I feel like that was a lot to throw us off to doubt anything we're seeing. Mm-hmm. Because when Potonomy goes into somebody, well, in this case, I'm like, yeah, all right, Mr. Memory Man's going in, and now we're going to get some answers. And then the delusion thing goes, I call it the delusion chick, goes in, and I'm like, oh, now we can't trust anything we see here, because it might be delusion.
Right.
Then he goes into, he sees Fukuyami, and I don't know, but I wonder, so we see later that Amy has been dreaming about Vermillion, that she's one of them, and then we'll find out that, I want to say Aubrey, Lenny was in the sister's body. So maybe there's some kind of psychic connection between Amy and Fukuyama for some reason. And maybe because it's her body, some of that carried over, so that when Potonomy went in there, he found some residue of that, because it's all melded together. And I think, I don't know, but I'd like to think that, yeah, there's this like weird insectoid creature in there, because that's kind of cool. And it would make kind of explain a little bit why he doesn't talk, because he doesn't have any tongue or lips or anything, or at least, you know, can't make human sounds.
Yeah, very, very creepy, very, very strange whole thing that happened there. So I'm interested to see if that means anything, or if we're supposed to think it means anything because of that whole delusion thing that we've been shown before. So,
and if it is real, I don't necessarily think that means anything bad about Admiral Fukuyama. Because I think one theme in the X-Men is some mutants are born looking kind of horrific. Mm-hmm. And that just adds to this whole how the rest of humanity fears and hates them. Like a Nightcrawler, do you know Nightcrawler?
Mm-hmm. Of course.
He's blue with a tail and he looks kind of like a demon, but he actually doesn't look ugly. I think he looks kind of cool.
I love his coloration.
Yeah. But his story is that people fear him right away because he looks like a devil and he's actually a super nice guy.
Mm-hmm. Well, like Beast. You know.
Yeah, yeah. So Fukuyama could be like that. Could be the nicest insectoid you ever want to meet.
He could be. That just happens to wear a basket on his head.
He should go on Tinder. Take that basket off and be proud. So another thing you said was that he seems to be in some weird polyamory thing already.
With the Vermillion?
Yeah.
With the, they're like androids. It's like Westworld territory here.
So, let's see. The thing about whether she's faking, and I think that Amal really fucked with her head, because she's at one point talking about her mother's funeral, and then she asked David, did that really happen? And it kind of reminded me of David last season, where he wasn't really sure about a lot of things because Shadow King had been mucking around in his head. And I liked when they first met up, like you were saying, he's like, oh, with him out, I can appreciate the silence.
Yeah. He said, I had no idea what silence was until Farouk was out of my head. It's probably how it feels for her too.
Yeah, but she's still messed up. She's got this. She said he put a bunch of spiders in there. I forget exactly what she said, but it was like, you know, he really does a number on you when he gets in there, I think.
And then also how much of what she knows or remembers is mixed up with Amy, like being merged with Amy.
Right.
Because we don't know that yet. We don't know that at that at that we're getting ready to find that out during that uh-huh. moment in the show, but we don't know that just yet.
Yeah. And it made me wonder if Amy's mother died, mm-hmm. maybe. I don't know if we know that. And she was mixing it up or something.
Mm-hmm.
Well, speaking of Amy, I guess I'll make that my number four, that I actually was thinking about her before she ever appeared. Because when, I keep wanting to say Aubrey, when Lenny was sitting in that room, it said on the wall, keep hands in plain view at all times, no physical contact permitted.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm pretty sure it said the same thing when David visited Amy in Clockworks. I mean, Amy visited David
mm-hmm.
when last season. And maybe they even tried to touch and they got reprimanded. I don't know if I'm misremembering all that.
I don't know if they tried to touch, but it was in the pilot, I believe, of season one, and it was David's birthday, and she had given him a cupcake with the sparkler candle on it.
And he said, you can't.
Yeah, he's like, you can't do that. I can't have that or whatever.
Wasn't that, there a flash of that too?
Yeah, there was.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. So I think even maybe subconsciously I recognized, hey, they're putting things related to his sister here.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they talked about the eye color, which is a cool little moment with Metonymy, and her eyes were now blue mm-hmm. and it showed David's face for a long time. And I'm like, his eyes are blue. And that right at that point, I'm like, I think it might be the sister somehow. And then, it did turn out, then they start showing the sister. Mm-hmm. And
did you notice her eyes right away? Because I did.
Her eyes?
Yeah, or like right away when we saw Aubrey Plaza in the right, I saw immediately her eyes were blue and I'm like, what?
Weird.
I'm like, why are her eyes blue? And then when I got the flash of David, they showed, yeah, like you said, that close up and his eyes were blue. And then I was like, oh shit. Yeah, made that connection. I didn't know like, oh my gosh, that's Amy. It was just like, oh my gosh, why are her eyes blue? David's eyes are blue.
Freak yeah. And then when they showed Amy, I think for some reason that pushed me away from thinking that it was Amy. I think it was because I thought all this stuff was going on at the same time. So that's it. What's your number, what, four?
So my number four is Oliver. I'm stoked that we got some more Oliver. I feel like we have been running very shy of Jemaine Clement this season. We've gotten tidbits. We've gotten some good stuff. When he's on there, he's good. He's on. But I really, really enjoyed, we talked a little bit about how he was having that exchange asking Farouk, like, well, what am I going to have to do? You know, he's like, is there going to be dirt? Is there going to be mm-hmm. a coffin, a pine box, a sarcophagus? What's happening
and he
here?
He said something like about it and he's like, oh.
Yeah. And he was kind of going, oh, he kind of made a face like, ugh. You know, he's like, I've got this new cream colored suit. You know, he doesn't like the idea of bugs and beetles and dirt. And I really like the exchange that he had with Farouk about the morality debate and some of the lines that came out of that. And yeah, I really...
Morality.
Morality.
What is it? Oh, right.
But I thought it was really interesting. You know, it's like he's... I do like his one line he had. He said, nothing's felt real to me for a very long time. And I'm like, oh, thank you, Oliver, for saying that for all of us, because I don't know what's real either, and nothing has felt real to me at the same time. But I thought that was like a true Oliver moment and not Farouk in Oliver speaking, that I felt that was really him. And I also think that it was him when he turned around and he told him just very calculated, like he still somewhat has, I think, a psychic connection with Melanie, because we heard him say Melanie. We get that flash mm-hmm. of Melanie. And then he turns around in the seat, looks at Farouk, and he tells him, he's like, I'm going to kill you, you know? And I thought, oh, there he is. That's Oliver. Yeah. That's the Oliver that we love. So I really love that whole exchange that they had.
Yeah, yeah. He said that right when Farouk is explaining his philosophy of homo superior.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you call mutants, by the way, in the comic books.
Yes.
People who don't know. And it's about like whether the lion asks the morality of killing a deer. And I think this is exactly what I was saying when you and I were talking about whether people think of themselves as villains.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, Farouk probably just thinks of people like ants, mm-hmm. you know, that this is him just basically saying that, like, I'm a lion and everyone else is a deer.
Mm-hmm.
And so they don't really matter. And so, yeah, anyways, then that's when he thinks of Melanie. And I think it's because, as far as we know anyway, Melanie doesn't have any powers. So he's like, you're calling the love of my life a prey here.
I thought Melanie was a telepath.
I think Melanie doesn't have any powers, but I could be wrong. Somebody wrote in and says, hey, you guys, Melanie doesn't have any powers.
I thought in season one, she was speaking to David through her mind. I thought she was a telepath.
Well, maybe David was reading her mind, I think.
Maybe. I don't know if that was ever really clarified, but I remember her speaking, but her words or her lips were not moving.
Yeah.
So whether or not it was that person, maybe. I don't know. Maybe she doesn't. And I mean, I'm okay with that. But
either way, that's what I was taking from this, that that's why he thought of her and then got like, I'm gonna kill you right in that moment. But listeners, let us know what you think. Does she have powers or not?
Yeah, because she's not in the comics, right? Melanie's not in the comics, so we don't really have a baseline for her. I really like when they were outside of the vehicle, out in the desert, and Oliver tells him, or Farouk says, what you said before, that you kill me. Well, you've been in the sun too long. He said, I'm more powerful than you. You know, he's being very cocky, very arrogant. And then Oliver says, well, then again, maybe I found your weakness. He says, oh, my weakness. You'll see. But in the moment of attack, and then it'll be too late. What fun. What a grand amusement. He's like, can I have a hint? He goes, you may. He said, it's a simple mathematical question. What is 1 + 1? Farouk says, 2. Incorrect. He says, you're very, very sly. A true snake. So I love that whole exchange. I'm real interested in what that means. We're getting mathematical questions. 1 and 1 = 2. Being led to believe something that we think is true, but it's not. Like what we were learning in previous episodes about green means stop and red means go. And what we think is, I just think that this whole episode just really questions, because they, like you said, they did the apparently on Legion, which I think makes us question everything that we've seen and how it's been presented so far. Yeah. So I love Oliver. I'm so glad we got some Oliver. I like that we saw a little bit of true Oliver come out. I'm a little bit worried about him, how he ended up in the end, because I don't know how much that was truly Oliver. And if it was, is he too far gone? So that's my number 4.
Yeah. I think sometimes Oliver is, I don't think he's ever in control of his body, actually. And when we see Oliver with Farouk is just a psychic projection. He's not real, you know? Mm-hmm. And so when we see Oliver going through D3, disintegrating people, that's Farouk.
Mm-hmm.
And when we see him here killing Amy, it's also Farouk, I think. But what I love is, when they're having this whole kind of ego battle a little bit, but it's very gentlemanly.
Mm-hmm.
It's very genial. Oh, I'm going to kill you. Oh, how are you going to do that? You'll see, but not until it's too late. Well, may I have a hint? You may.
I know. And Farouk's just amused at the whole thing, because he's so confident in his abilities that, you know, he's not worried at all.
It just reminds me of in the show how I think instead of doing typical like psi battles or just struggle that you have in every other superhero thing, they find more refined and artistic ways of representing it, like with the dance, you know, the dance off. And here it's just this funny, gentlemanly conversation. It kind of reminded me of that.
It's like a war of words instead of like combat or whatever. Or you see them like wrestling, like when David and Farouk were wrestling and they turn into a tank and Farouk turns into smoke, and that whole exchange back and forth, that battle of wills.
More entertaining.
This is more of a gentlemanly war of words.
I didn't really get the 1 + 1 thing. I don't know if we were supposed to. Maybe it has something to do with some in Legion. There's a lot of times where one person is actually a melding of multiple people.
Mm-hmm.
So, but Shadow King seemed to understand it right away. I don't know, but anyway, I hope. I love that. Yeah, he came with that cockiness, though, that he seems to have a plan. And it reminded me that Oliver is supposed to be a pretty powerful mutant himself.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe there'll be some kind of a weird battle there.
Yep, I'm excited. And I just loved seeing Oliver.
Yeah, I know. I like Jermaine Clement so much.
I do, too.
I don't know if I've probably said it on the podcast, but I went and saw him and who's his partner? Brett McKenzie. So I saw them live and they were super funny. And they, I think, had every woman in this theater wanting to sleep with them by the end of it.
I can see why.
They're super charming.
They are very charming. Jermaine Clement, there is something about him. He's very suave, very smooth, very charming.
Mm-hmm. And they know how to work the humor just right to come off as kind of this charmingly aloof and desperate at the same time. And inept and somehow suave all together in one.
Fall for it every time.
Disarming. Yeah. Okay. Is it my turn?
Yeah.
Number 3. Okay, so I was like, why is the Shadow King doing this? Why take David's sister's body and turn it into Lenny and send him to D3? Lenny said that, you know, she wanted, that Shadow King told her to go there and tell David that he knew, Shadow King knew where his body was. But I don't think Shadow King knows where his body is, because...
Mm-mm.
He would have it. He would be getting it.
But does he care? Is that what matters? After this, is this what matters?
What?
Him finding his body. Is that really what he was after?
I think I don't know. But my impression was that, you know, it's always been said if he finds his body, he's going to be way more powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And I had assumed that David knew where his body was, but I guess not, because David was working with him before this, and so he would have told him. But I think he just saw an image of it, but he doesn't know where it is.
Mm-hmm.
Because remember, the monk took him in and showed him, and that was making me wonder, why did the monk show David all this stuff if the monk knew that David was working with the Shadow King and the monk wants to stop the Shadow King? I'm not totally clear on that.
He didn't show him how to get there because it was a valley that's now a desert. See, I knew that that landscape had changed. But, I know I said that.
But why even give him these clues to it? But anyways, I think that in a meta way, in our real world, that they want to keep Aubrey Plaza on the show and keep doing new and interesting things with her. So they figured out a way to bring her back into the physical world. I think that's why. But... maybe that he sent her there so that she, I think he, for some reason, wanted David to know that he had put Lenny in his sister's body. I think it was personal to David about his sister, and Lenny was just a tool.
Mm-hmm.
And because, you know, when David figured that out, he got really pissed off and said, "I'm coming for you." But then I'm like, well, why would the Shadow King do that if David was already working for him, with him, then why would he want to piss him off?
I know.
There was this article on bustle.com that says,
uh-huh,
in the comics, David Haller's full powers weren't triggered until his stepfather was brutally murdered by terrorists in front of his eyes. Maybe the show is adapting some form of this origin story with a different family member, and Farouk is trying to coax out David's true potential for his own nefarious purposes.
Man,
so that's one idea.
Eyes on your own paper. I have that exact thing.
The second one, though, is maybe he just has... I think he probably has Amy's consciousness. The articles I saw said they thought she was just dead, but that's Shadow King's MO, is to steal the consciousness and hold it captive, right? So I don't think we've seen the last of Amy, and maybe she's a hostage so that he can have more leverage over David.
That is a really good point, and I thought the same thing. I thought, you know, maybe her body is sort of not really dead, but it's clearly Lenny has taken over, like her DNA has merged. And I say merged because you can tell that she hasn't fully taken over Amy's body. There are the blue eyes and maybe some other attributes she has.
Yeah, leftover memories.
Yeah, and maybe some leftover memories. But I think clearly Lenny is in that body alone. I don't feel that she's really sharing that body or that her consciousness is still there, because I think David would have picked up on that, and so would Patonomy. I think they got flashes.
It was interesting when David was saying he couldn't tell the difference between
her
ideas and Shadow King's.
Right.
Though that was cool.
Yeah, he could read her mind and he can read all that, but he can't tell whose is whose.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why he didn't know for sure if she was telling the truth about not really working for him. And how much she knew. I know that's my number one, is just all these questions, because it's what we don't know. is, you know, and part of that, what is Farouk's plan? Why would he use, and I put kill kind of like in quotation marks. I don't know. I'm like you. I don't know that she's really dead. But why would he use her as a warning to David? Because I think she served as a warning, you know, because he essentially destroyed whatever alliance that he had with David. You know, he implored him to help him find his body from the monks, like why this is right and why this is what we need to do. Yeah. So,
and he was on his side.
Yeah. So why is he just totally, and this was planned out. This was planned out back when we saw Oliver and Lenny coming into D3, and when they, you know, we thought they were looking for the monk, but they were looking for this, you know, so this goes way back, you know,
or maybe,
that he had
this
plan hatched.
They were like killing two birds with one stone.
Maybe the Shadow King needs this device, this whatever the hell this thing is, that it's like a DNA merger for his own body. Maybe he needs it for his, because he needs to find his body. His body's dead, but he's got to get his consciousness back in there. I don't know. Maybe he needs it, and maybe he's testing it, and he's decided to like, you know, I'm just gonna fuck with you, and I'm gonna do this to your sister and put Lenny back in your life, and I'm gonna mess with her because I'm gonna let her think that she's free and she's not. I don't know what he's really after. I don't know if his body even matters. Is that really what he's looking for? Is he trying to draw David out?
Why do you keep saying that? Why do you think he's not looking for his own body?
I don't know that he's not. I'm just questioning it. Because we've been led to believe that he's been looking for his body, but he was looking for Lenny's body. And that's what we've seen. That's all that we've seen him do. I don't know that it does. I'm questioning it.
Yeah. It's all a question, of course. I just assume that he knew where Lenny's body was. And so he got it, but he doesn't know where his own is, so he hasn't gotten it, you know? But yeah, you could be right. Who knows?
I don't know. Well, I don't know that I'm wrong or right, just that it makes me question it, because we thought that that's the path that he was on, and really he was looking for someone else's, or at least...
They did a good job of making us think that he was looking for his own body, because that's what the show has been talking about up until now, and when... Oliver was pulling out the coffin or whatever he was pulling out. They didn't show it very well. And I think they did that on purpose because we know that Farouk is in this egg that looks like it's from Orc.
I don't know what to believe because I don't know what's real and what we're supposed to believe and what we're not supposed to. But it's like, that's just what I'm questioning. And if that was really what he's been after the whole time, and what's, maybe he's trying to draw David out because it worked. You know, I think he's brought out David, and I was also questioning the same thing, was why would Farouk risk pissing off someone who's potentially supposed to be the most powerful mutant ever, you know, and is that setting the stage for like what you mentioned, what happens in the comic? Now, it was his stepfather, right, that died in the comic that triggered David's full potential with his powers, and in this essence, it's his sister. And maybe she's not really dead. Maybe he is holding her consciousness hostage, but David's being led to believe that she's dead, and he's wanting David to become that powerful mutant that he knows he can be or something.
He talked something about that when they were talking before about come to the big boys table or something. So yeah, maybe it is something like that. And then he can use him. But it also feels like this is leading right into future Sid's warning that David's going to kill Shadow King in the desert.
Yep. Within the week.
Did you watch? I didn't. Did you watch Scenes from Next Week?
I did, but not that it helps me. I mean, it's,
I don't want to talk about it right now, but I want to talk about it at the, like maybe at the end of the news.
Okay.
It's a bit of a spoiler. I want to know what happened because somebody else said they thought it looked really good.
Yeah, I only watched it once, and I don't fully remember. I just remember watching it going, well, that does not help me at all. I still don't know what the hell's going on.
It's probably... Did you watch Mad Men? I forget.
Nope.
Whenever they showed Scenes from Next Week, it would just be like somebody getting in an elevator and then someone having a drink, and that would be it.
I think I remember someone telling me that was, they were just really
Matthew
messing
Weiner
with people.
Because didn't want to reveal anything, and they forced him to put together stuff, so he's like, all right, fuck you. I'll have
this
guy,
put this on,
like... putting on his tie, and that's it.
Repeat every week.
Yeah.
Okay, so my number three is Farouk, and we've talked a lot about him already. I really liked his homo superior line. You mentioned that already, which is what Magneto said in X-Men. Magneto uses that, and I know it's used in the comics a lot. The debate of morality that he had, we've talked about that a lot already with Oliver. I thought it was interesting some of the words that he was saying, that he was using. And I don't really understand exactly what we're supposed to get from it. maybe it will make sense later when he says, what is the universe without each sunrise? It's how we judge our gods, not on their math, but their poetry. And he talks about...
What was that in response to? I don't even remember hearing that.
Yeah, that was when they were driving in the car and Oliver was driving. But and then see, he calls later on when Lenny, he calls her the sun. Doesn't he call her either the sun or the sunrise? And so it's like, okay. But I love the writing. I love how the actor, how he says the words. I like how he kept switching languages. Did you notice how he would speak different languages again? Like he was doing that in another episode. I think whenever he and David were chatting and he was switching between like French.
He always does.
And Farsi. And then Oliver did it too. Yeah.
So he can match him there.
Yeah,
he's
I thought that was
he's
brilliant.
A man of the world.
He is a man of the world. Good old Oliver. But I think we've talked a lot about Farouk already, at least as far as my points that I had about him. So that was my number three, just in general. Mm-hmm. And his ego.
Très bon. Okay, let's see. My number two is the show. I think it's more playful this year. I mean, it was always creative. One thing that comes to mind is the whole chalkboard Professor X thing from last season. But
I love that scene.
Yeah, me too. That they get even more like, oh, whatever, just let's do anything. And so like when he said apparently on Legion, that just killed me right off the bat.
Yes.
Or the upside down room was really good with the gravity. Are you like changing the laws of gravity in here? She's already like tweaking out about everything else that's going on.
Just give her some liquid paper, make her happy.
the PA comes in that, you know, says things like, any shift in reality may signal an attack. If you feel something, say something, which is a play on if you see something, say something. But mm-hmm. she also said, new symptom alert, unexplained malaise. So it's like, it's detecting things in people. Unexplained malaise can be in any workplace, by the way. The whole posturing between Oliver and Farouk that we already talked about, so I won't go over again, but I just loved talking about, you know, how he could kill him and would he please give him a hint. Yeah, I guess that's it. I think we've already covered a lot of the playfulness, but I love that they just keep bringing that because it's funny. It makes it almost a comedy in a sense, or at least it satisfies the same part in me where I just get kind of tickled by stuff.
Which get delighted, I think, by it. Yeah, definitely. Well, with between the little bit of the lightness of the I mean, it was kind of heavy stuff. I mean, talking about morality and killing people and Lenny and being like tweaked out and messed up and confused and everything that was happening there, it's pretty heavy stuff, but they did it in a light way, which I think that we needed based on what happened there in the end, which is what are we on number two now?
Yeah, sure.
So we're just going along. We don't even know. I don't even know what's real. Well, that's what I was going to go into the last scene, which was a big shift from what we had in the first part or first three-fourths of the show, where it was, you know, these playful exchanges, and we had that relationship with David and Lenny kind of coming back together, and you could see that friendship kind of sparking a little bit between them until he starts to realize what really did happen, and we get to see that play out in that last scene. And for me, just personally watching that, there have been, Legion isn't really scary to me, but there have been a couple little scenes here and there that have been scary that I've been like, ooh, you know, that kind of takes me back a little bit. This had to be one of the scariest scenes that I've ever seen in Legion. And I mean, Jemaine Clement, as much as I love him and he can be so charming and suave and have a little bit of goofiness to him a little bit, he was scary in that scene. He was very ominous when Amy comes into the kitchen and he's washing his hands like a surgeon, and he holds them up like a surgeon does. He's just scrubbed for surgery.
And he just appeared, like she turned a different direction and he was there. I don't know how that happened.
But. Right, because she's like, well, I'll just go get my coat, you know, when she sees him. And she recognizes him because she was there in season one. I think she did see him a little bit, and she's like,
I think
Oliver?
She was going to run.
I think she was going to run. I think she recognized him, but I think she was at least going to make him believe, like, okay, sure, I'm going to go with you.
Right.
And he knew. She's just trying to get away. Of course he did. Of course. Or Farouk, I'm guessing that was, I mean, he's being taken over by Farouk in that moment. But yes, he appears around the corner again with his hands up, and he's just very slowly, you know, leading her back, and she's walking backwards into the kitchen, and he has this very ominous look on his face, totally scary. I love when they chose Tom Petty's Don't Come Around Here No More started to play. That was a brilliant remake.
Some kind of slower cover by somebody else.
Yeah, it wasn't his, it's his song, but it wasn't him singing. I don't think it was a remake cover before. No, I've never heard. I'm wondering if it's original for this show. I don't know.
I don't know
that I've ever heard that, but I think it was brilliant. I loved it so much because I'm a big Tom Petty fan anyway, and I do love that song.
Me too.
But I thought this
was
a
great,
great remix of it.
It's a good song. Don't come around here.
Right, I'd go away. Who are you looking for?
Stop. And,
so I just thought it was so scary. Amy screaming while the transformation was happening. You've got this. The room's kind of dark. It's blue.
That's how I felt when I was throwing up the other night.
Is that how? Is that what it was like for you? Were you screaming like that? That was horrible. That whole scene was just horrible. The image of the flowers on the floor with the blood dripping, the merging of like Lenny's DNA into Amy's body was horrifying to
me. You took that gun out and injected it.
Yeah. And he's like, we're going to find the sculpture in the stone.
Ooh. Poetically fucked
yeah,
up.
Yeah. Very, very poetic. Poetically dark. That whole thing, and just seeing that transformation, like Amy dying, Lenny rebirthing, was just, and it sounded like bones and tissue crunching and moving and morphing, and it was just, I was like, what the fuck am I watching right now? I didn't know what the hell was going on. I didn't know whether or not to be excited because it was so different what I was watching, or completely horrified. And then to see Farouk kind of in the background, you see like the reflection of him in Oliver's eyes, and you see him kind of in the background and behind that screen, whatever thing is in Amy's house as he's watching it happen. I mean, geez, it was horrific, but so well done. And the music playing the whole time.
What happened to her husband?
He was dust.
Really?
Yeah, you didn't see him. Yeah, because she's like, she's looking out the window and he's standing next to her and they're looking out the kitchen window and you know, of course we got
to
talk about the donut
truck. I thought
he went
to get the door,
right?
And then he disappeared.
Yeah, well there was dust and dirt or like ash. It looked like ash on the ground, and his beer bottle was there kind of blowing in the wind with the door open, and there was just like, you know, whenever they were poofing people at D3, Oliver and Lenny, and they were going poof, and they were like turning into ash. That was what he looked like. So that's how you
kind of knew.
Exactly
the same?
Pretty much. Yeah, they just poof, and they were like ash.
Cool.
Yeah, so he was ash, just kind of blowing in the wind.
Oh, you say ash, and it makes me think of Ash versus Evil Dead.
Sorry. Sore point.
The show just got canceled, everybody. I think they did this whole scene really well, and even the lead up to it, I noticed she's standing there with her husband, and he says, you know, that feeling like something really bad is about to happen. I think they call it dread. And I'm pretty sure, because they're out in the desert drinking and it's hot, and I think there's a fan going, but it's like really slow, and you see the shadow, and it's like foom, foom, and it's uneven, foom, foom, foom. And I didn't consciously recognize it at first, but I'm like, this is annoying. Like, it's just unconcerting. So they do little elements like that really well. And that just made me feel like primed for something shitty because it was so uncomfortable before Oliver even showed up.
Yeah, it was like everything just kind of stopped, like the air stood, but then you could see the wind kind of coming in slowly from the window, and it just seemed like,
and the fan
the
stopped at
dead.
That point.
So it was just this very weird sense. He's talking about the feeling of dread, and then, well, this is probably why you're feeling dread. You're getting ready to die. So yeah, that's my number two.
Okay,
the whole end scene.
Number one is chapter 6, conspiracy. It's what's his name, John Hamm's.
Another narration from John Hamm. Mm-hmm.
Did you see Jesus in that piece of toast?
I see Jesus every time I make toast.
But no, I'm serious. No. You must have looked at it.
I saw a face.
Really?
I don't know if. Yeah.
Okay. Because
he told me to.
I thought the point was that she was totally nuts because there was nothing like Jesus in the toast, but. You saw it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Maybe it was supposed to, I mean, that's great because it's kind of illustrates the whole point about conspiracy theories to me is I think people see things that aren't there.
I mean, I saw, like I said, was it Jesus? No.
To
but
me, it
was
just
it like
a toast
face?
With nothing.
You've never looked like a split piece of wood or a cloud or anything of that nature and saw something that resembled a face or anything.
Many
like
times
that.
The moon. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's,
but in this,
I mean,
toast, it didn't look, I've tried to see it. I got to go back and watch again though.
I only watched this
episode once.
You know, would I look at that if someone hadn't said, oh, that's Jesus in the toast. I don't know that I'd look at it by myself and say that's Jesus. I just say, oh, I see a face. Yeah.
To me, it looked like they deliberately made it look as little like a face as possible so there would be no chance you would see a face in it. To show their point that people will see things in anything. But you saw the face, so maybe I'm wrong.
I saw the face. Well, you know what? I think differently than what you do, so that might be why.
Well, I really love that they had this whole conspiracy segment because, yeah, I'm going to be super biased here. More than usual people, but I hate conspiracy theories and I think they're nuts and they're totally paranoid and that we landed on the moon and that, you know, Lee Harvey Oswald killed JFK and there's this, you know, the whole concept that they said about how we look for patterns because that's how we're biologically engineered because we needed to do that to survive in nature. I think that's true, but then we overdo it and we see things that aren't really there. And I really like that slot machine thing where it showed what was it? It was
the first one
coincidences,
was coincidence.
Suspicious facts, random details, opinion, and so strong is our belief that a pattern must exist that the human mind will reject the pieces that don't fit, and then coincidence gets crossed out. So I really like that. And then the pessimist sees danger hiding behind every back, and there's one guy with a knife. And the optimist sees friendship. And then the kid looks over at Oliver at the chalkboard illustrating all this. And Oliver's been the bad guy in these.
Mm-hmm.
He's the one that sent the kid out to get run over by a car. And so, and he's got one hand behind his back. So I'm like, he's got a knife back there. But on TV, the conspiracy theories are almost always true on TV shows. I just don't think they are in real life. And there's this great documentary that I've been watching. It's coming out in sequential episodes called This Is Not a Conspiracy Theory by this guy, Kirby Ferguson, who also did one called Everything is a Remix that was really popular about modern attitudes towards intellectual property and stuff like that. But anyways, this is not a conspiracy theory. It talks about how our psychological and other forces in our society, mostly in the US, shaped all these conspiracy theories that have come up, and his reasoning behind, he's like me. He mostly thinks they're bullshit. So that's why I like the documentary.
I but, see.
Anyways, I think this whole segment kind of went along with that too. It was sort of saying that they're not really true, but I don't really see how it relates to Legion. And I think some of these segments have related later on, a couple episodes later.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, maybe this one will relate, because I did have a hard time making, I mean, as much as what I enjoy listening to John Hamm narrate, you know, about whatever he wants to narrate about, I don't care. Whatever he wants to talk about, I'll listen. But I had a hard time, you know, relating his talking about conspiracy theories in this particular episode. I feel like some of the other ones you're kind of like, oh, okay, I can kind of see how that ties into the episode that we're watching. This one was not so much, but like you said, maybe it will be in the next one or one to come.
And there's been one or two that didn't, like the delusion one that really didn't come until later, so maybe it'll be like that.
Yeah, I don't really care what, like I said, I could listen to him talk, and it's really strange. I don't know if it's like that for everyone. When I watched this live, I had just listened to John Hamm and his narration on this conspiracy theory. And then like a minute later, I was taking notes or doing something on my computer waiting for it to come back on. And there was the Mercedes commercial. I think it was Mercedes, and John Hamm is like the voice of that car commercial. Mm-hmm. And I was like, wait, what? What? Is it back on? Because it was him talking about this car. When I just heard him talk about conspiracy theories.
Somebody put that there so you would see it.
You know, there are some people in my family that would probably believe something like that.
I had this friend in college who, it's really sad, but he had this totally active phase of schizophrenia. Like, he never had anything like that, but he was my roommate. And all of a sudden, I think it was triggered by drugs, he just started hearing voices from the TV talking to him, and he thought we had put something on the radio against him. And walking down the beach with him, there was a beached seal, and he thought my friend Ken dragged it out there for him to see, you know, stuff like that. And I started feeling kind of crazy hanging out with him too much. I just started to feel like I couldn't discern reality, and I'd see patterns where there weren't any. And in my opinion, these conspiracy theories are like a form of that.
Mm-hmm. I know people like that, or knew people like that. I'm for real. I can relate.
Yeah. Anyways, yeah. Okay. So your turn.
So that goes, we're number one, right? Mm-hmm. Almost done. So I kind of covered some of it already, but my number one is what we don't know. And some other questions that I had that came out of this was, why was Amy having the recurring dream about being one of Fukuyama's Vermillion? Yeah. It seems like she's got some sort, like, does she have some sort of psychic link to Admiral Fukuyama?
And was she one of the Vermillion? Out to her, or is this some latent power in herself? That's the thing with
does
telepathy.
Does she have powers that we don't know
about?
It
could just be one person, like with Melanie, you know? It could have been David or Melanie, but yeah.
Right, yeah. I mean, I don't know that she had any powers because David was adopted, and as far as we know, she didn't have any powers or anything to speak of, but it seems clear that there was some sort of link, because then those things came out with Batonomy, had his hands on Lenny and was seeing her memories. I think those were just remnants of what was in Amy's mind after Lenny had taken over, when he sees those flashes, and then we see it, and then we hear her talk about it before Oliver and Fruit come in and do what they did to her. So I'm curious if we'll get some more information about that and what that means. And my other questions already talked about, like, what's Fruit's plan? Why is he doing what he's doing? Why would he do what he did? And how's he expecting David to respond? And yeah, we've covered all of that as far as like some of the comic stuff, if he's trying to get David to reach his full potential. So those are just questions, what we don't know. It's not really helpful at all. Just things that I'm hoping that that come out of this, and other questions that we have, hopefully we'll get answers to.
Yeah. Yeah. I want all the answers. All of them.
All the answers. We're going to get them. Noah Hawley promised. I talked to him.
He did?
Okay. Yeah. I got that direct line.
Okay. Good. Notes.
So, talked a little bit about the music. We already talked about Tom Petty's Don't Come Around Here No More. That was performed by series composer Jeff Russo and Noah Hawley himself.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, found that out.
How come
you didn't
mention that when we were saying whether we thought... Anyways, all right, that's awesome.
What? Well, we talked about it, but it wasn't the time. Now is the time.
Okay, got it. Sorry. Yeah, that's really cool.
The time is now.
I love it. So what was he doing? Do you know what Noah Hawley was? Was he playing an instrument or singing?
I don't know. They didn't say. Just said that it was performed by Jeff Russo and Noah Hawley himself. And I thought, oh, shit. I don't know if he sang. I don't know if he played an instrument. I don't know what he did, because that was the only tidbit of information I could find. Maybe I'll find out more. Mm-hmm. We also had the Velvet Underground's Heroine that played during Oliver and Fruit's drive, that played there in the beginning when it transitioned from, because I love how they're doing these transitions and going into the opening credits, because it went from, you know, we have that opener with Lenny, and then it goes into the desert with Fruit and Oliver. So I really like the music choices that they have. And then they had Cat Power's Werewolf when they're digging up the body, some really great music that they're doing. Some lines. Oh, that submarine donut car. That's like the best thing ever. And I want to drive one like now. I mean, why aren't we talking more about that? I want to drive that thing around. It reminded me of the Oscar Mayer Wiener car that you see around. I love that thing. What the hell was it doing in the desert? Maybe that's another question, what we don't know. Why the hell is that desert?
That Amy, that the desert is D3's place to, like I said, push things
like
out of
witness
the way.
I think it's like the witness protection thing.
Yeah, they bury bodies there, and they it's like total dumb fuck nowhere witness protection.
Yeah, very weird,
trying to keep her safe, failed, because they had guards even, right? So, and then the guards disappeared.
Yeah, poof, ash on the ground. Sorry, I won't say that word anymore. Those were all my notes. We pretty much covered everything else, all my other notes that I had.
Okay, my only other one is you mentioned that they had this discussion about morality. So Oliver, who is like, morality? Oh, yeah. And then he goes, the electrons that make up this car were part of a star once, a star that exploded billions of years ago, killing any and all life that may have existed on hundreds of planets. Or did it? My point, if those atoms still exist, they're holding this car together as we speak. Then perhaps the idea of life and death is obscene. Oh, wait, maybe obscene, not obscene, but irrelevant. First off, it felt like the wrong person was talking there. It seemed like that would be something Farouk would say. So I wonder if that's just the show messing with us, you know. But anyway, it reminded me, this is a little self-indulgent, but I used to think about this kind of stuff in college where I'd be like, what is the point of life, and why should we be good people, and why should we do, you know, what is, why does anything mean anything? And because I thought of it like, if we're all just a collection of atoms that are rearranged in a certain specific way, but it's sort of, it feels like it could be anything. Like, but what I eventually got to was that we're capable of suffering, and that's enough reason to want to have empathy for people and not, and try to alleviate or prevent suffering. And and on the other side of that, we have capability for joy and pleasure, so to try and make more of that, more of the good feelings, less of the bad. So it's all, I don't know if this is making any sense, but I just started to get really disassociated with the human condition, thinking that it's all just kind of arbitrary and we're all just collections of atoms. But when you get down to the way that we are organized and that we function, is that because there is a capacity for suffering, and I know what it's like to suffer, that I should not want to have other people have that experience, or animals too. I mean, I was a vegetarian at the time.
Ah, so that's what, makes, I don't more know, sense.
It kind of, I wonder if this dialogue here came about because of similar, it seems like he's right on the same page with where I was when I used to think about this stuff. I hadn't thought about it in a long time, but it totally brought that up for me. I just don't know why Oliver was saying it, not Farouk, because it seems like something Farouk would say.
Hmm. Interesting.
Anyways.
It's all irrelevant.
Anything? That's what we get from all of this. Anything else you want to say about it? I think we did a damn good job, actually.
I don't know what else to say. I don't know what's happening. I'm just going to keep watching.
No, you know, we nailed it. There's questions, and I think the questions that we have are the ones that we're supposed to have, I think.
Right. I know I'm okay having questions. I'm comfortable with that. I'm comfortable not knowing. I really am.
Absolutely.
It's just, you know, I sit there and I watch and I'm like, I don't know if what I'm watching is real or if it's relevant. Is it just, are they just messing with this? Does it mean something?
Yeah.
And I don't know what to make of half of that.
What bothers me is if I'm watching a show and I don't get it, but I think I'm probably supposed to, and I'm just not smart enough, you know, versus, I think this show does a good job of, you know, there's definitely things that we're supposed to wonder about, but they just haven't given us enough information. And there's things that we're supposed to think we know, but maybe we're wrong. But then there's a lot of things that I think they really want us to understand, and, you know, because they're giving these little revelations and things, and especially with Lenny. I feel like they really fleshed out what the hell is going on with Lenny a lot more this episode. So that made me feel good, because you get to understand a little bit more, but not everything, you know. We don't want to be given the whole shebang, but a little here and there is nice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I am glad for more Aubrey Plaza and Lenny.
Yeah,
I think,
yeah.
And seeing more, I think more true Lenny than what we've seen. Mm-hmm. Since we were introduced to her in season one. So that was nice.
It's also nice, though, just counterpoint to that, that Aubrey Plaza has gotten to play a lot of different things, because there's been different manifestations of whatever's animating her. Like last season, when she was being, I think, controlled by the Shadow King, there were some really good moments there, too, where she wasn't this tweaked out addict, but she was more of a, like, a games master, or, you know, that psychologist or whatever.
When they went all black and white in silent movie and they did that whole scene in the hallway. Yeah. I mean, that was just some of the most brilliant stuff I've ever seen. I didn't love Legion before, which that was kind of later in the season, in season one. I mean, I was already totally hooked by the first episode, but I mean, it was just like, I just didn't think they could take me anywhere else. And then they start the silent movie thing, like the monster returns, or, and then she, you know, she's doing the little signal with the gun in her.
It was scarier back then too.
There was some more scary elements, but that whole thing that she got to do was brilliant. Of course, you know, the writing and the cinematography, everything was just brilliant, and beautiful things that we get to see. So I'm hoping we get to see more of that. Nothing like it.
Cool. Let's take a short break. There's more to come. Stay with us. Don't come around here no more. Don't come around here no more. Whatever you're looking for. Hey! Don't come around here no more. I'm giving up. Stop.
Okay, so this week on news, some really interesting news that came out this week. This is from CBR.com. FX has expanded the second season of Legion with the addition of an 11th episode. So the season will now end on June 12th with Chapter 19, written by series creator Noah Hawley and directed by Keith Gordon, who's also directed episodes of Fargo and Homeland. The announcement arrived ahead of last night's episode, Chapter 13, which brings the season to the midway point. So yeah, we're now halfway there. So what are your thoughts? Do you think this is good news or bad news?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's great news. The only thing is I'm doing three podcasts right now and I'm like, I could use a break, but I want more Legion. I love Legion. So I'm just shoving that stupid, petty reason down and being happy.
don't get all down on Legion because we
no,
love it.
No, I'm not
it
at
took
all
us
down
a whole year
on
to get
Legion.
Here. No, that's okay. You know, I was.
It makes me wonder if they must have plotted it out, but they miscalculated. That happens in comics all the time, by the way. They say a series is going to be a certain number of issues, and they're like, oh, we're expanding it because we needed more space to tell our story. So I think that's great.
Well, I think it's great. And I was initially very happy and excited because I'm like, you, more Legion? Great. I think maybe they maybe need an extra episode to tell the story that they're telling. And knowing that we're only at the halfway point. However, I did get a little bit concerned that ratings are not so great right now. And
they're going
with
down?
Ratings are down compared to season one. And they've continuously gone down for season two. I don't keep up much on ratings. I don't try to pay too much attention to it because I know that I love it. But I should be concerned because if I love it and other people are not and the ratings suck, that is a good reason for them to cancel it. And I really worry that this, I mean, filming has been over. I mean, this has been wrapped
and
in the bag for a while.
Shit. Wow. And they haven't announced a season three.
No.
So you're saying you think they might want to just wrap up the whole thing?
Yeah. My fear is that they've added this last episode to wrap the series up because they're fearful of being canceled.
I'm quitting the podcast now. I don't want to be heard again. There's too many shows. Like, there's just too many shows so that the audience gets split. I mean, I think numbers are down for everything.
They are. I don't know what everyone else is watching, but I don't know what the hell else is on Tuesdays that everybody's watching. I'm not watching anything else but Legion. I'm podcasting and then I'm watching Legion right after. So come on, people, go watch Legion. Get those ratings back up because that's what I'm fearful for. Because like I said, this should have been filmed, like this whole season two was filmed and wrapped months ago. So why would they just announce
another episode
at this late date and they haven't
even
filmed it
yet?
You're probably
right. I don't know. But it's possible that they filmed a lot of stuff and when they're cutting it together, the episodes, they couldn't shorten them enough and they had enough material to make another episode out of it. Sometimes that happens.
Maybe.
But
anything is possible.
I'm kind of stretching, but yeah.
Anything's possible. Stress. I'm open to anything positive at this point because once I was thinking that route, I thought, why would they do this? Why would they add something? And then whenever I started reading a little bit about ratings and that, you know, maybe this isn't such a great thing after all and that this could potentially be a wrap up for season two that they're wanting to, you know, because they think they're going to be canceled, then that wouldn't be such a great thing. So I don't know. I'm going to try to remain positive and just hope that it carries on because it's a freaking brilliant show. Okay,
well,
so the next...
yeah, I mean, if it doesn't, then it's a good thing that they do want to wrap it up, because there's nothing worse than a show that abruptly ends right in the middle with no warning to the creators, right?
Exactly. So and then you're left
that's
hanging.
That's the silver lining, yeah, if that does happen.
If it does happen. I don't want it to end. Oh my gosh, I love this show so much. I'm so wrapped up in this show that I will be terribly sad. But yeah, if they're at least thinking that, because yeah, you're right. There's nothing worse than all of a sudden you think that there's more story to tell and they leave it with more story to tell,
like,
but then
Deadwood.
It just ends. Yeah, like Deadwood.
Which I never saw, but I always hear people. Or fucking Firefly. Ugh.
Oh, yeah, there's a big one. Everybody knows about that one. Yeah, exactly. So I don't know. I'm going to try to remain positive, but I thought, man, why do I have to think too much? You should just stay positive. Turn your damn brain off already. Stop being a pessimist. So the next item that we have is from Gothamist.com. And this comes from an interview with Noah Hawley. We don't see too many of these, so this was fun to look at. So they're asking him, they said, how concerned are you about holding the audience's hand? Is there a line where you feel like things may get too far out, or do you even worry about that? He says, nope. I worry about it. I think my goal is to really focus on character as much as possible, with the idea that if you're invested in these people, you're invested in the story. Obviously, we're not a plot-driven show. An episode of Legion doesn't add up to this happened, and then this happened, and then this happened. A lot of it is the experience of the show and trying to put you in David's shoes. And whenever you have a subjective show about someone who sees the world differently, you're going to see the world differently. But obviously, I worry to the degree that I sometimes tell the story that I want people to enjoy and follow. But I also have confidence from season one that the audience is willing to suspend their need for answers as long as they trust that they're going to get them eventually. Next question they ask is, how much did you adjust your storytelling process heading into season two? How much did you think about changing it? He says, I've said that I've never made a second season of anything, which is true to the degree that I've never continued a story into a second season. And so honestly, I didn't really have a strong sense of how to simply continue the story, as funny as that might sound. For a show that is attempting to get below the surface of a complicated mind, it just didn't seem like we went from confusion to clarity in season one, and we're just going to live in clarity now. I tend to build a story from a base of ideas in, so there's a lot that goes in before the actual action of the story is figured out. What is the story about this year? I had a feeling I wanted the show to be a little more serious this year, because I do feel it's important to invest the audience in the characters, and the way to do that and the way to do that is to really raise the stakes of the story, certainly for David and Sid and their love story. I really think what drives the show for most people is wanting that love to be real and wanting that relationship to work. So they ask about, they said, why do you think so many superhero shows end up being so conventional and cookie cutter? Holly says, my feeling is that maybe that the majority of comic book stories are more interested in entertainment than exploration, but the genre itself is capable of real depth and innovation, and my goal was to test those boundaries and see how much can I reconstruct the story, how much can I play with the structure while still keeping it grounded emotionally. And you ask about whether or not I'm worried about losing the audience. Yeah, we all lead busy lives with very little time to commit things. And if the show feels like too much work, if it requires too much from you to track everything, I would imagine a lot of people will drop out after a certain point. So my goal has to become that each hour has some critically entertaining or compelling or mind-blowing element to it that's going to keep pulling you through. Because I guarantee you in the end, it all pays off.
I love all that. Like, playing with structure while keeping it grounded in emotion is right up my alley. Love it. I want new and fresh things, but he said character and experienced focused versus plot focused. You're just spelling out reasons that I didn't even realize why I love the show.
God, he's so brilliant. I would just love to have a conversation with this guy.
I mean, not everyone likes that. Like, people like these procedurals, these cop shows, or because they have intricate plots with twists and things, and that I can understand that, but I'm more into like these weird mind-blowing things, and also just getting to know the characters really well and caring about them.
Yeah, there's a lot more to that interview, but that's the pieces that I cut out. It's a really great interview with him, and he really kind of goes into a lot of it, and it's brilliant. I love every interview that I've read of him, and he's got a lot of interesting things to say, and I just love him. I wonder if he's single. The next item that I have is from the Daily Beast. This was an interview with Aubrey Plaza. As she says, I think it was really kind of traumatic for me to experience that transition as Lenny, she says. And that's from her character's fall from the height of lunacy in season one to the powerless wreck she is now. She says, you know, we don't get the scripts in advance that much, so I'm kind of flailing around on the astral plane trying to ground myself in something real. And you kind of never know what's real and what's not. It was a really different experience to go inward and find the vulnerable side of Lenny and let all the other stuff fall away. So she said, they say Lenny's shapeshifter quality and showrunner Noah Hawley's reliably last-minute scripts require that she essentially play, according to her, multiple characters with one role, which I've never really gotten to do. I feel I've pushed that to the max in every different situation on the show. I'm always interested in coming up with a different look and a different version of Lenny, because when you have something that's so open to interpretation and not grounded in reality, you can really, really let your imagination go. They say Lenny now has half the DNA of David's poor sister in her body and likely another voice in her head. And she says it's a really confusing time for her.
So, oh, that's interesting. Another voice in her head. Maybe that's Amy's consciousness, or it could just be sort of remnants of her psyche or something like that.
I bet. And then just another little interesting tidbit that came out this last week is the Mystery Writers of America announced the 2018 Edgar Award winners. That's the Edgar Allan Poe Award winners. And Noah Hawley won for Best Television Episode Teleplay for the episode Somebody to Love from Fargo. So I thought that was pretty cool.
Cool.
It's pretty prestigious, those Edgar Awards.
You know... Shoot, who plays Sid?
Rachel Keller.
Yeah, she was a big character in Fargo season two.
Mm-hmm.
Totally, indeed she was. Totally different. She was a bad girl.
I still need to watch. I've seen the movie, but I have not had a chance yet to. It's on my list, like ever. About 30 other shows are on my list, and that's definitely, especially because I love Noah Hawley so much.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that'll be the next one that I add.
Yeah, those are, each season is its own story, and I think you might like number three the best, actually. It's got Ewan McGregor.
Mm-hmm. I'm a Ewan McGregor fan. I can dig that. Yeah, so that's it for the news.
Awesome. All right, let's get into listener feedback. I'll start. Steve Brown says, love the apparently on Legion instead of previously. Aubrey Plaza, no need to say more. I wonder what he would have said if he would have said more. I would like to date her. I think that's what he would have said.
Steve, I insist you elaborate.
And then he says, it's always five somewhere. Yep. I'm drinking some whiskey right now.
I have that clock. That is my rule. Jose C. Jimenez says, damn, dude. As soon as they showed his sister after making such a big deal about Lenny's eyes, I was just thinking, no, 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 no. Damn. And hearing his sister scream while she was being transformed, oh man, is the sister's psyche now held within that gun, or is it trapped in the head with Lenny or with the Shadow King? I'm assuming she can be switched back, and this is what pushed David to kill Farouk. All the other things I'm wondering is, why doesn't Oliver resist the Shadow King a bit? When the Shadow King was inside David, we would get David and Shadow King, and the struggle is what made David appear crazy. With Oliver, however, the Shadow King is in complete control of the body. Oliver saying that he was going to kill him is the only bit of resistance, unless Oliver is just playing along to find the body, to get him out, and be able to actually kill the Shadow King. Anyways, amazing episode.
I'm not sure, but I think in season one it was said or implied or something that the Shadow King was getting stronger and stronger the whole time David was growing up. So maybe he's strong enough now to have more control over a body. Also, maybe it's that Oliver just responds differently to this kind of thing.
And I mean, Oliver, I don't know. We know exactly how strong he is. He is, I know we've been told, a powerful mutant in his own right. But when you look at how the Shadow King fed off of David, because he was such a powerful mutant and he fed off of that and that energy, versus how he's kind of feeding off of Oliver, who isn't as strong as David. And maybe that there's a difference there. Maybe Oliver can't fight him as much as what David is, because he's not as strong as David.
And David didn't consciously know that the Shadow King was in there either. And I think Oliver does. So that changes the dynamic somewhat. I think Oliver's also the type of guy who likes to keep his composure no matter how he's feeling. So it's interesting. Yeah, I mean, I see your point, but I think it would be kind of boring if they did exactly the same thing anyways with a different person. So I like they're presenting it in a new way.
Mm-hmm.
Agreed. Mofevo says, I found David's discussion about silence/quiet amazing. This episode took me back to the first episode introduction about the desert maze. Looking forward to hearing how you think the device works. I kind of wonder if the Dead Sea Donuts was a play on having dessert in the desert. Maybe. But this device, I think you just extract someone's maybe DNA or something from the flesh that can make it so that it can then inject that pattern onto another body to make the other body take the form, and it probably injects some other qualities like memories and things like that, something like that.
It's a DNA merger, and that's as far as I know about how I think this thing works. I don't have the slightest clue. I thought it was really interesting. We got a little peek at some of the other devices. Did you happen to look at some of the other? It was a really quick shot, but I could have
sworn. I think Carrie made them all, though.
Sure, why not? He probably made that little sphere, too, that David was in. But I thought, and I'd have to go back and watch again and maybe pause the screen. I just never have time for this stuff. It looked like there was something. What the heck is that thing Professor X wears on his head? I could have swore I saw something that went on their head, like, when he's in.
Oh, Cerebro.
Yes. It looked like something like that in there. I thought that was. Whether or not that's what
it was. If it was, then they use it to find other mutants.
Yeah, I don't think that's really what it was. I just think maybe if there was something that looked similar to that, it was probably just supposed to be a nice little tie-in, because they always try to kind of tie in just a little bit.
Yeah,
or they
do their own versions of things, yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know. I thought that was kind of cool. Anyway, next one is from Abby, is it Reese? Going to say that. Sorry if that's wrong. She says, hey guys, regarding the foam pointer fingers in the sky outside of Division 3, you guys spoke of them during last week's podcast for Chapter 11. I've been paying close attention to these fingers. Thank you. In one of these scenes, I can't remember which episode, but I think it's episode 3. It is clearly seen that they are present throughout the entire sky, pointing in different directions, not just at David. What's interesting to me is that in the previous episodes, we've seen them, specifically last week's when he was on the roof with the Monk, the sky was crystal clear and sunny. This week, when we see the Carries run to the roof after everyone is awoken from the plague, I noticed that the sun was still out, but the sky was very cloudy and almost completely obscuring the green fingers. All that could be seen was blobs of occluded green. Could this have something to do with the fact that in this episode, David wasn't awake, and maybe somehow the sky fingers reflect his mental status? If so, what does that say about Division 3? Could it mean that the whole setting is another plane that David can access? I can't get enough of this show, and I look forward to hearing both of your analysis each week. I don't have anyone else on my astral plane who watches this show, so I depend on you guys for hashing things out. Oh, awesome. Thanks, Abby. That's a really great observation about the fingers. I was paying attention, but I will admit I wasn't paying that close attention. Makes sense, though.
I've never seen one of these, and I think you guys are all conspiring to mess with me, and there's never been any green fingers in this show. And everybody writing in is part of a conspiracy. No, I've never seen one.
We got you down that rabbit hole. We finally got you believing in conspiracy theories.
So I that sounds interesting. I like that the sky being cloudy is a reflection of David's state of mind. As far as all of Division 3 being a setting that's another plane, I don't think that's true. That would be pretty far out.
Yeah, I don't know that I go that far, but I do like the thought of the sky cloudy, obscuring the green fingers versus sunny and his mental clarity and maybe where he's at mentally. That, I think, could be a pretty cool connection. I'm kind of obsessed with those green fingers. I can't stop thinking about them. I was wondering, even watching this episode, I'm like, are we going to see the green fingers? Are we going to see them again? No, there was not. I didn't see any, but
I hope they show up again. I don't want it to just be some weird thing that never gets brought up again. All right, that's our show, episode 13. Thank you for listening, everybody.
Yeah, thanks, everyone.
If you guys are not watching Westworld, I forget, have I mentioned that on this podcast before?
You may have, because it kind of, because if you do like this show and you're not watching Westworld, I mean, talk about questioning your reality.
I pitched Legion on my Westworld podcast, and now I'm going to pitch Westworld, because Legion's more playful and it's more of a fun show, but Westworld is dramatic and epic and it's about these androids that appear human, and sometimes you don't know which is which, so it feels like Legion because you're not sure what's real. And it also plays with time and a lot of mystery and revelations, and it's very deep. I imagine just about everyone watching Legion is probably already watching Westworld, but if you're not, I highly recommend you check it out, and then you're going to need a podcast to figure it out. So luckily we have, if you go to westworldcast.com, it's me and my friend David, who is, if
you've heard, good.
Heard me on Walking Dead Cast, my co-host Karen, it's her husband, David. And yeah, it's really been a blast to podcast about that show and try to fucking figure it out. It's even harder to figure out than Legion, I think.
No, I was so glad when you had asked me to help you with Fear the Walking Dead and not Westworld, because I would have been like, sorry, I'm sick too. I can't do that one.
Because I can honest, I got sick and I had to choose one, and I might have picked Walking Dead Cast to go and do and get help on Westworld, because Walking Dead Cast gets more downloads and everything, and it was a big episode this week because of a big character moment. But I was like, who's gonna go do Westworld? I don't know who would want to do that.
I would have been like, I'm feeling kind of sick myself.
Stomach. Okay, if you guys want to write to us, if you want to get in touch with us, you can email, or it would be awesome too if you'd send a voice message. I would love to play more calls on this podcast, but either way, you can send text or voice to legion@podcastica.com.
And you can find us on the web at facebook.com/legionpod.
Be sure to check out our other shows at podcastica.com. I know you guys are starting up Lost in Space. Have you started that yet? On Strange Indeed?
This week, we are starting with Lost in Space.
Okay. Have you? So you watched it? Yeah, you watched
the first, first episode.
How was it, the first episode?
It was really good. Cool. I liked it. Yeah.
It looked pretty cool. I actually haven't seen it yet, but
I think it's like good.
Put a lot of
family
into it.
I think there's some really, yeah, I think they've put some money into it. And I think what's different, maybe Stranger Things, maybe you can probably watch for family depending on what your kids can handle, because there are some elements that can be pretty scary on Stranger Things. But this is definitely, I think you can watch with the family. So that's cool. Something a little bit different that we haven't done yet.
Right on. All right. That is our show.
Thanks for listening.
Do you have any Adderall, by the way, or Robitussin? Anything?
I got some liquid paper here at my desk. I sniff it every day.